Well, I think that last song by James Taylor captures the essence of Mr. Rogers. What if we could just shower love to the people around us? Not just even the people we love. He had a tendency to share love and shower love to anyone and everyone around him. So the question is that idea of showering love to the people around us an ideal we should pursue, or somewhat naive and wishful thinking? That's the question that was played out in the movie. They changed some of the details. The original guy who wrote the article, his name was Tom Janod. He was a reporter for Esquire, and he was a no-nonsense, fact-finding, expose the truth at all costs kind of reporter. In fact, he had just completed an expose on Kevin Spacey. And he had exposed and character assassinated him for his hypocrisy and the way he portrayed himself and things he did in the past. He turned his whole life upside down, of which there's still court cases being acted out even today on what is true and isn't true. And in the wake of that, living down in Atlanta, near the area where I used to live, he did an article on a murder of a twin. There were two young boys who had grown up together. They were best friends. They lived together. They are now in their 20s. They had a tendency to drink a little bit too much, and one night, one of them, in the midst of a fight, shot the other. And Tom decided to go and do an article on this. And he kind of took armchair quarterback psychologist and began to talk about their codependency and turned it from a freak accident of two brothers who actually had a good relationship but had a bad moment, and turned the whole story and the family's tragedy into dirty laundry for the whole world to see, saying that the surviving brother really had done this on purpose, talked about all the family fallout and pain that had come from it, and his article was then published. The mother of the twin calls up Tom and says, "How dare you take our family's grief and pain and twist it in such a way just to sell a few more magazines." For some reason, her voice resonated in Tom's mind. Now, the truth is what the truth is. He wasn't a particular person to believe in the goodness of humanity. He'd written too many articles and exposed too many truths to believe in that. He'd grown up Catholic and had a faith, but long had gotten away from faith in humanity or even God. And personally, he was struggling because he and his wife had been trying for a while. And they weren't able to have kids. It's here that his editor assigned him his next article, having character assassinated Kevin Spacey and this poor twin. The next report, the next assignment was to go and interview Fred Rogers, a children's puppeteer on a TV show on PBS. So let me ask you this. If you're Fred Lawyer's agent, if you're Fred's wife, if you're Fred's manager, having seen that Tom has just character assassinated two people, do you tell him to take this interview? We'll pass on this one. Fred takes the interview of this character assassin. And Fred is going to ultimately outfox this assassin. In fact, Fred Rogers outfoxes his enemies in general by turning them into his friends. Against all conventional wisdom, he takes the interview to meet Tom. Because Fred Rogers knows something about human beings that you and I know as well. Hurt people often hurt people. And Fred had this ability to see the hurt in Tom and also to see past the hurt in Tom as he built a friendship with him in the most unlikely of scenarios. Tom set up the first appointment and he made his way to the studio. Immediately, a few things struck him. First, it was a very guided, structured tour that day, When he came in, it was a very humble office, not like many of the celebrities who lived very much a double life and had a lot of extravagance. It was humble. A couple posters on the walls of Daniel the Tiger, one of his puppets. A few fan letters. Smelled of stale coffee. Huh. Fred Rogers made his way and said, "It's so nice to meet you, Tom." As Tom began to get into his interview questions, he was intrigued that Mr. Rogers seemed genuinely interested in his life. Not in a deflect from talking about his own issues, he wanted to get to the tour, but he immediately engaged with Tom. He said, "Tom, what is it like working for a big, important magazine like you do?" "Oh, well, I get to do a lot of articles, meet a lot of people." "Well, anyway, so you're going to give me a tour of the neighborhood?" And Mr. Rogers was, again, genuinely interested. Like, was it always your dream to write? Now that you have written for so long, what are your dreams for what you want to do next? And Tom began to disclose and talk about it. He just couldn't believe how warm and genuine he seemed. We'll find out the truth, he thought to himself. Then Fred said one more thing. He said, "Now, what are your dreams? But we're about to show you a tour of the neighborhood. But Tom, what was it like growing up in your neighborhood?" And again, he somehow was so disarming. Tom talked about growing up in his neighborhood and what that was like. And well, eventually they get to the tour. And as they get to the tour, they make their way around, and Mr. Rogers talks about his philosophy of helping every child feel loved and feel unique, that feelings should be something that are mentionable and manageable. He talks about his faith in God and how that faith helps him think about how to believe the best in people and to think about the character arc of love in every situation. This could not be more different than how Tom saw the world. But the thing that really struck Tom in that first meeting was it was a very busy, very structured day. There were meetings, there were script rewrites, there were back and forth on camera, off camera. And yet every time he saw Mr. Rogers, in every scenario, he was the same genuine, caring, loving guy. It wasn't just an act he put on for the set. In fact, his station manager would often get frustrated because Mr. Rogers, anyone who came in the studio, every child, he'd get down on their level and talk with them and interact with them and ask them questions the same way he did with Tom. He just never met someone this genuinely interested in loving other people. A few months later, Mr. Rogers was in New York. He had bought this little apartment for $11,000 20 years earlier and had kept it. So whenever he's in New York, he'd stay at this apartment. Well, Tom heard he was in town. He called up and said, "I know we saw you at work. I'd love to see you at home. Could I come and interview you?" Mr. Rogers said, "Well, okay, if you don't mind that I'm in my bathrobe." "I don't mind. Well, then come on up." 5 minutes later, Tom came into his apartment, and the same thing, it was just humble abode. Pictures of his boys on the walls, and there was Mr. Rogers in a blue and yellow bathrobe and skinned leather moccasins. Just could not be more comfortable being himself with this interview with the press. He said, "Tom, come in, it's so good to see you." And immediately as he sat in a lazy boy, Tom did, Mr. Rogers laid out on the couch like they'd been friends forever. In fact, he was so comfortable, he put one hand on his ankle and just said, "What do you want to talk about?" The phone rang. It was Joanna's wife. "Yes, honey. Yeah, I'm here talking with a new friend from the neighborhood. He's here to ask me some questions." "Yeah. Oh, you want to talk to him?" And he hands the phone. And Tom says he then talked to his wife. She was very engaging and talked to him like they were old friends she was catching up with. He then handed the phone back, and Fred said, "Thank you, honey. All right, talk soon." Hangs up. Then Fred, with his moccasins and bathrobe, began to tell a story. And again, what struck Tom is just how open he was about his life. He talked about being bullied as a kid. He used to be overweight, and they called him Fat Freddy. How much that hurt as a kid, and how kids can be so cruel, and how childhood can often be so mean. Fat Freddy. That might be why he works out every day at 5:30 and takes a nap every afternoon. It's in the morning he works. He swims 2 miles every day. He prays for people by name for an hour every day. Goes to the office and then takes a siesta in the afternoon, which is where Tom had caught him. He also talked about being very shy as an only child growing up in Florida, and how it was his world of imagination that really helped him entertain himself, but also give voice to what was going inside of him. Even Daniel the tiger he uses in his show, he wished he invented that character and that voice on a previous TV show he did, but it was really a chance to give voice to how he was feeling as a shy little boy. And as Mr. Rogers told stories, he immediately would engage and ask Tom questions about his life. He said, did you have a special toy when you were a kid, Tom? Special puppet or something that meant something to you? Tom's like, no, I don't think I had any special puppets or toys when I was a kid. And then like this memory he had not thought about, almost pushed away, appeared to him. He went, wait a second. I did. And he had this memory of old rabbit. A stuffed animal that he loved very, very much as a kid. He's like, yeah, I had this rabbit and all the stuffing was out of him. Yeah, we called him Old Rabbit. I remember loving him very much. He looked up and Mr. Rogers had stood up and went to get a camera. He said, Tom, can I take your picture? Why? Well, I'd like to show it to Joanne later, so when we're praying for you, we'll have kind of a picture to go with our prayers. Okay. From that, Mr. Rogers began to talk about faith in God and how his faith in God informed what he did, why he did it, the reasons he did it. But at the same time of talking about faith in God, he also discussed his doubts, things he didn't know about, suffering, pain. Then again, he would turn it back to Tom and said, Tom, do you have any doubts? And somehow Mr. Rogers could just make you feel so safe to say things you wouldn't otherwise say. Doubts, Tom said. Sometimes I feel like I'm failing as a man. Did I say that out loud? Wow, that must be hard. What's going on in your heart these days, Tom? Well, I don't have a lot of faith. I was a Catholic a long time ago. Guess God or the universe decided they don't like us because it's not letting my wife and I have kids that we've been trying for a long time. Oh, that must be hard. Then he said, Tom, do you mind doing something with me? In fact, why don't we all do this together, what Mr. Rogers said. He said, let's take a minute and let's think about the people that loved you into being. Tom's like, nobody comes to mind. Let's take a moment and think about who made you who you are and who loved you to be who you are. Tom's like, okay, as Mr. Rogers said, let's start. Tom would write later that this is the closest to prayer he'd been in a long time. He had a rather conflicted relationship with his mom and dad, but this is the first time, the first thing he thought of was his mom and dad. Instead of thinking about all their imperfections and the anger he had toward his father, he thought they were people who had loved him into being who he was, and for the first time he started thinking about gratefulness related to them. So that encounter, which he talks about in his article, gives you a feel for how Mr. Rogers outfoxed his enemies by making them his friends. There's three things he did that I think are worth considering. Number one, he curiously engaged with people, Mr. Rogers did. Rather than prejudging them, or assuming things about them. He always chose engaging and listening before he spoke. He outfoxes enemy by curiously engaging with them. And Mr. Rogers says he got these ideas from his hero, a man named Jesus Christ, who says he was God come to earth to teach us how God interacts with us by curiously engaging. One day there was a guy named Nicodemus who had made his way to see Jesus. And what the Bible records in John 3 is that as he came, he was a man of the Pharisees, which may not mean much to you, but he was also a ruler of the Jews. Now, that meant that he was the ruler of the Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin was a group that literally was trying to kill Jesus in those days. Jesus had all kinds of assassins, not just character assassins, but literal assassins wanted to take him out, the Herodians, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Sanhedrin. And here is a guy who is one of the main teachers and leaders on the Sanhedrin. And he comes to Jesus by night. And Jesus makes time for him. And he says, Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God because no one could do the signs that you're doing unless he was from God. And Jesus begins to ask questions. They begin to engage and talk about spiritual things. And Jesus asking questions. They talk about, how do you find real meaning in life? And Jesus says, well, kind of like you get born by your mother for your first birth, you can be reborn by your heavenly Father for a second birth. It's not something you do for God. It's something he does to you. They have this fascinating conversation. Then Jesus engages with Nicodemus by giving him a verse that might be the most famous verse in the Bible. John 3:16 comes out of this conversation. What's it all about? Well, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that's me, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. I'm coming to bring eternal life. Then he goes on to say, for God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world. I thought that's all religion did is condemn stuff. No, he did not send me to condemn the world, but through him, you might be saved. Now, to be saved, you got to know there's a problem to be saved from, but that's different from condemning. Jesus curiously engaged with people in all kinds of acts and circumstances. In fact, it's interesting, Tom Hanks, when he was interviewed about playing Fred Rogers, what he learned about him. When they were doing a movie tour together, Fred Rogers had passed away, so Tom Hanks was doing the movie tour with his wife, Joanne. And she said, you know, my husband was not a saint. It comes easy for saints, I would imagine, to do this stuff. My husband worked on his anger. He worked on loving other people. He worked at being present with others. It was a very specific act he did. And she said he would be so thrilled that Tom Hanks signed on to play him. His favorite movie was Forrest Gump. Life is like a box of chocolates. He'd seen it 40 times, and every time he found something new to look at and to engage in. He loved Tom Hanks, and he loved Forrest Gump. She says he would be thrilled. When Tom Hanks was asked, like, what did you learn as your study of Fred Rogers as you were learning to play the character? He said, well, a couple things. One, he said, ultimate success comes from three things. First, be kind. Secondly, be kind, and thirdly, be kind. He said, you need to realize that I believe that appreciation is a holy thing. When you look for the best in a person, you're doing what God does. In fact, when Tom thought about the storyline that came from this real story with this Esquire reporter, Tom, he said, I saw it in action in this story. He said, Fred had this ability to see something in Janad, and he worked at it to bring out the best in him, not just as a writer, but as a person. It's taught me to be open to possibilities, the possibility for opportunities, possibility for people, the possibility that reconciliation could actually happen, and even forgiveness. Are we willing to suspend? Like Jesus, like he suspended judgment against a guy who's on the Sanhedrin, to get to know him and start a friendship with him. In fact, that guy, Nicodemus, is one of the guys who takes Jesus' body off the cross that many years later. The second thing he did to outfox his enemies is that he chose to prioritize their needs over his own comfort. He had lots going on. He didn't have time to spend building a friendship with another guy, but he did. He always said, your needs are more important than my comfort, my rights, my plan. And that just kept winning him over. Fred Rogers once said that the enemy of evil is forgiveness. Isn't that a great quote? The enemy, the only thing that evil can't stand is forgiveness. It brings people together. He said, what interests me the most about the characters in the Bible is that they make mistakes, but God uses them anyway. And not just in little ways, in important ways. Nobody's perfect, but God can even use our imperfection. It's a mistake to think that we have to be lovely to be loved by God or by others. Isn't that great? You don't have to be lovely to be loved. Now, where does he get this idea of prioritizing other people's needs over his own comfort, over his own right to be right in a conversation or argument? Well, again, Jesus, his hero, is the platinum level gold standard of this. When Jesus put upon a cross, his enemies, the Romans who are crucifying him, literally are pounding railroad spikes into the nerve endings in his wrists with a torture method called the cross that was designed to suffocate you because you'd have to pull up to get a breath on those nerve endings to capture a breath. And this enemy of Jesus, who was literally killing him at the time, is watching him die. He'd seen 1,000 men die. It didn't really bother him at all, so he's paid to do. But he'd never seen anyone die like this. Jesus pulls up to grab a breath. With a little bit of breath he could pull out, he saw him look up to heaven, the centurion did, and he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This enemy of Jesus had seen men curse God and curse people and certainly curse the Romans while they're being crucified. He had never seen somebody see the needs of their enemy. Our need for forgiveness is bigger than your need on the cross. And this Roman centurion sees Jesus praying to God to help him and says, man, truly, I've seen a lot of men die. I've never seen somebody die like that. That was the Son of God. A God who could prioritize his enemies while he's dying at their hand. Well, after the article, the next 4 years, Fred Rogers will build a relationship with Tom. They're going to send 70 emails back and forth with each other, getting increasingly personal and hitting every topic, really. He talked about kind of masculinity and how in the current culture, talking about feelings and things wasn't real popular, but he wanted as a father to engage with and be curious about his kids and to see their inner world like he had an inner world. And Tom would go back and say, like, but how do you stay so calm in the midst of the darkness when the world just feels so dark? Fred would write back, well, Tom, I pray for light every day. I believe there's good in everyone, even when it's hard to see. Sometimes Tom would get more open and talk about that childlessness. He'd say, I don't know why God lets people suffer. My wife and I really want to have a child so badly. Fred Rogers would write back, Tom, I don't have all the answers. I don't. But I know that love is stronger than pain. Have you felt that love in your life? He'd come back with, Fred, I just feel so broken as a man. Why no child? Why so much loss? I just feel like a broken man. And he would respond with, Tom, you're not broken. You're human. I pray for you to feel loved just as you are. And I believe God, I love this, holds your pain. Well, through the 70 emails back and forth, he'll encourage Tom to soften and be grateful for ways his dad really impacted him and made him the man he is. And he would say those emails helped him rebuild his relationship with his father and the anger and resentment he'd had for so long and replace it with some thanksgiving and some gratitude. Eventually, as the back and forth, Fred would gently encourage him to be open to adoption. And he and his wife will eventually adopt a little girl. One of the emails that struck my attention was this last one I want to show you. He says, as you know, every morning I pray for you. With all those other people I pray for, I really do. You are loved with a greater love than anyone could ever imagine. Tom, I trust you'll never forget that. Now, they had other conversations about life and death and God and Bible and Jesus. They even talked about death. What happens when you die? Mortality. What really matters? And Fred had this way of saying no feeling was unmentionable. Whether you're a kid or adult, we need to talk about the feelings we have toward big issues so we can discover them. He felt like talking about death was important. I remember when great-grandpa died in our family, I remember we took our kids to the wake, and I remember the casket was open, and Beth and I walked Sierra and Javen up, and we let them touch grandpa's hand and ask questions and say, it's okay to feel sad because we're going to miss grandpa. The other side of the family was not particularly comfortable with death, certainly weren't comfortable with faith, and they couldn't believe we would let our kids go see grandpa, touch grandpa. But we felt like it was important to talk about the fact that we miss grandpa. It's okay to feel sad about that. And because grandpa believed in Jesus, Jesus defeated death, and one day we can see grandpa again. And the contrast was pretty amazing because they probably watched a lot more PBS than I did. But it was just so interesting to share some grief and some comfort with our kids as we saw and talked about their great-grandpa. Their need for talking about it was greater than my need to not be in the awkward moment and not know what to say or what to do. I think that's the last thing we see that Jesus did and Fred Rogers did outfox his enemies is that he knew when to be silent. I mean, watch that. Have you ever seen the clip where he, you know, interacts with the fish that dies? You're like, man, it's so slow. There's so much space in his TV show to think, to process, to feel. In fact, Tom Hanks was asked, what did you learn most playing Fred Rogers? And he said, I learned the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking right now? And Fred Rogers had this ability to be quiet and engage with people and ask questions and genuinely want to get to know people. And again, you see that in Jesus. Jesus stands before Pontius Pilate and a guy named Herod whose dad tried to kill him. And it says that sometimes he just remains silent. He said nothing. When he stood before the governor, it's what Pontius Pilate was called, it says, and Jesus spoke nothing. And in that moment, the governor marveled. Most people be begging for your life. I can get you out of here. Most people be making deals, offering bribes. Jesus was so comfortable that he knew that God was in control, he could remain silent. And Fred Rogers certainly saw that, and Tom experienced that. See, Tom eventually does write that article. And the way he writes that article is so unusual. If you've never read it, you can Google it. But he talks about how, because of Mr. Rogers, they adopted a daughter. This he writes about later. And that daughter ends up coming with them to church. He became a churchgoer and a believer in Jesus and God because of how he saw Mr. Rogers love him so well like Jesus did. Last article I read said they're going to some Bible teaching church in America. In fact, their daughter was old enough now that she'd recently gotten baptized and become a follower of Jesus. But Tom begins his article this way. He says, once upon a time, there's a child with an old rabbit. A stuffed animal he called Old Rabbit. But all the stuffing was long gone. It was kind of an unstuffed rabbit. In fact, it barely even looked like a rabbit anymore. It's like this big, greasy hunk of skin. Though his eyes were gone, his nose was gone, there's a little red thread for what used to be his tongue. This little boy loved Old Rabbit, and he wasn't sure exactly why, even. This old rabbit taught him how to pray. One day they were going down the street as a kid, and that old rabbit fell out the window. That night, this kid prayed desperately with kind of that ongoing summoning that only a child can do. And you say, God, please save Old Rabbit. Please help Old Rabbit. A few hours later, his parents walked in the door, and they had found this rabbity roadkill. Greasy and dirty, it was filthy and precious. And that little boy learned that sometimes God does answer prayer. And the next line in his article is, "You were a child once too." That's what Mr. Rogers taught me. You were a child once too, where you prayed and you believed. He had thoughts and feelings. And he goes on to describe Mr. Rogers' encounter with him at all these different instances. He begins to describe his impact on other people. It goes on and on. He tells a story from that movie clip we watched earlier where all the kids are singing on the subway. His song while Tom watched. All these stories he witnessed. A man who loved people so well. Who saw the hurt in people, saw past the hurt in people. And so he entitled that article, "Can You Say Hero?" How about for you and I? What if for you and I, we began to see past the hurt in people? We began to choose acceptance and love and choosing to appreciate more the people around us. Wouldn't we all do better if someone saw not just our crabby behavior or ornery moments or our worst tendencies, but saw inside of us was a desire to connect, a desire to love, a desire to be loved? What if we began to look for the SOS in the people around us? Oh, it's not save our ship, but there's some sense in which somebody who just needs a little bit more encouragement needs to mention that what they're doing and what they're contributing makes a difference. In a moment that somebody's being kind of crabby or ornery, to give them some acceptance and the benefit of the doubt and not the prejudging. Wouldn't our marriages be better if we look for the SOS in our spouse on a bad day? Wouldn't our families be better if we took the time to not say, "I have the right to be right and it's about my comfort," but instead to say, "I'm going to lean into your needs for appreciation or respect or a chance to process"? What if just this week, like Fred Rogers did to Tom, like Jesus did to everybody around him, what if we look for the SOS in the people around us? I want to invite the band to come out and do this next song. It's one you probably know well. It's by The Police. And it's about him writing and saying, "I've sent out a message in a bottle. It's my SOS. Boy, I need some connection. I'm feeling kind of down. I'm feeling kind of lonely. I'm feeling like, man, things are not going the way that they need to go. I need somebody to remind me that what I'm doing matters." What if everyone around us has a message in a bottle? And what if underneath our veneer and beneath the kind of way we seem like we're all put together, what if underneath that we realize that there's a chance to do holy work, as Mr. Rogers said, the holy work of appreciating the people who come along our path? What if we prioritize that? The SOS in the people around us.